Luke 15, we find that there's some consternation, there's some disagreement going on, there's some disrespect, dishonor between the Pharisees and Jesus, which was not unusual because the Pharisees were the kings of the system. There was a religious system. Imagine that. Well, we know all that's gone, right? No, 2,000 years later, man, we still have religious systems, don't we? Yeah, we're still battling them. Well, Jesus battled the one in his day, and it was a really dominating religious tradition. How many of you guys have built fires? You have homes and they have fireplaces in them, and you build a fire in there when it gets cold so that your family can be warm and the room can be warm and it can be nice and warm. I know I'm in the wrong environment to be talking about this because we can't even freeze a mud puddle down here. So, but I when I was, you know, growing up, and then where Tanya and I and the family grew up, and I pastored for 14 years, it's in the North Country, Meridian, up there, and it was cold up there, and it, especially, you know, back in the early 90s and stuff, it was cold. I mean, we had a little bit of winter every now and then, you know, we had like a month or something like that. And it was cold enough to burn a fire in the fireplace. And we had just built a new home. We had some wonderful church members that helped us. And we built a home and we lived in it. And it was wonderful. It was ours. And we had a big fireplace in it because I love to build fires and stuff like that. So I was going to build the first fire in this fireplace. And, you know, other than the one that you build out of a little paper just to make sure it'll draw. But I was going to build the first real fire in this fireplace. And because it was cold and my family needed warmth. And so I was going to build the fire to be a comfort to my family. All right, let me just make that point. I was building it for the purpose of trying to do something good for my family that would be helpful and warm and encouraging and nice for us and would bless our life. So I put the wood in there, got all the, you know, I put the little lighter log deal in there because I didn't have any real lighter, and I light that baby up and it starts smoking, you know. And we're standing there looking at it, and then it became apparent to me that the smoke was coming out into the room instead of going up the chimney. And of course, Justin and Amy had to point out, Dad, I think they just did that. You know, they started coughing. I said, there's not even any smoke out here. You know what I mean? But they wanted me to know that they were choking, you know, and Dad, you've got the, what's going to happen is smoke all filling the room up and everything, brand new place. First time we light a fire, smoke, and I'm thinking, what in the world? You know, I'm thinking a bird built a nest up in the thing and it won't, and then all of a sudden it dawned on me, what was wrong, guys? The damper was still closed. Yeah. And all the smoke that was going up, shoot, just came right back out. And that's religion. Religion was sent by the Lord. The Torah, the law, the Bible, the Word of God was sent by God to be a blessing, to be something that encouraged us, that warmed us, that would be a benefit to us. But by the time we took it and made all of our rules and our restrictions and all of the laws and all the everything that went with what God did, we turned something that was intended to be a blessing into something that would choke people to death. And that's exactly what had happened. The law had become so heavy. It was such a demanding thing. It was such a harsh thing that by the time Jesus came, Jesus would run headlong into a major system of force. And you remember the story of how the Pharisees, scribes, we call them the pastors in your notes, you know, for lack of a better collective term than pastor. They were the scribes, the Pharisees, the Torah teachers, the legalists, probably an elder or deacon or two in there. These were just a collective group of religious leaders of the town, and they criticized Jesus. They actually, you know, this is something that's kind of mind-blowing. They actually were in charge of creating a community that reflected Jesus. That was their job. That the church, the community that they pastor, would actually reflect Jesus. But yet, here they were criticizing everything Jesus did and was about. And they did it a lot, and Jesus heard about it. And so in Luke 15, Jesus has heard enough, and they complain and criticize and gripe about the crowd that Jesus is drawing. Those people don't look right. They don't act right. They don't talk right. We don't like them. They have tattoos and beards and mustaches and, heaven's sake, smoke cigarettes and drink. And I mean, they don't go to church, so we don't like them. And they're hanging with you, Jesus. And if you're really half the Messiah you say you are, they can't hang with you. They can't be your friends. They're an embarrassment. And you're receiving them. That was the charge. You are receiving them, which means you're welcoming them. It looks like you want them. It looks like you're trying to start a movement with them. Those people don't ever come to synagogue. They go listen to you everywhere. You can go read Mary Had a Little Lamb and you'll have 5,000 people sitting there going, yeah, that's awesome. They won't even darken the doors of the synagogue. They never come hear us preach. So why is it that they're so captivated by you and so repelled by us, Jesus? And so Jesus said, all right, let me tell you this story. And he tells three stories that all have the same point. Although, as we've seen, they are different and they have a different dig on these pastors. They're all intended to point out the issues between religion and Christianity. Between, like I said in your note, between the difference between a system and godliness, between morality and righteousness. You can be a tremendously moral person and not be righteous. And that's what they had become. Boy, they had laws for everything. They wouldn't even... do you know that you couldn't even pick up a rock on the Sabbath day? Because you might put it in your pocket, and then you might take a step with it. And if you did, that's carrying a burden on the Sabbath, and that's breaking the law. You did some work on the Sabbath day. Seriously. Seriously. And they had about 500 other laws like that went with it. You could pick your child up on the Sabbath day, but you couldn't walk with them, you know. I mean, it's just crazy. It's just crazy. And that's what life had become in religion of that day. And Jesus hammers it. He hits it with everything he has in these three stories. The first one was about a shepherd that had 100 sheep. And he counted them one day, and there was only 99. And then Jesus looked at them and said, look, you know what that shepherd did? What anybody would do. That shepherd did what everybody would do, wouldn't they? I mean, you would do this, wouldn't you? Leave the 99 and go get the one? I mean, surely everybody would do that. There's no shepherd that wouldn't do that. Who would not do that? And I'm sure they're thinking in their heart, ain't no way I'd leave my 99 and go after one. Put my 99 in jeopardy? For one? No. So what Jesus was doing with the man and the sheep was telling us that God counts in ones. God cares about one, and that God will leave a bunch to go find that one, and that God keeps on searching until he finds that one. And he doesn't give up and he doesn't quit. And when he finds that one, he brings them back to the family. And the family welcomes them and loves them, and they become a part of the family, and nobody beats on them, and nobody tries to make them feel guilty, and nobody tries to hold them up to disrespect and dishonor. And Jesus said, I run toward their pain and not away from their pain. And that's why people follow me and don't follow you. Second story was a woman with 10 coins. She lost one of them. She turned her whole house upside down to find this one coin. And we learned from that God cares about us all. He receives us all, not just the big crowd, but every single one of us. God loves us independently and cares about even one. And God searches in the cracks for those that are lost. And God listens, you know, to those who are lost. How much does God love me? He loves me this much, you know. That's what he loves me. The Pharisees live life like this. Jesus lives life like this, looking and listening for the lost. I mean, Jesus is showing them what it is to be a real shepherd, a real leader, a real community of God. Jesus is saying, this is why I came into the world. This is why God interacts with the world, because God cares about you. And if God didn't care about you, you would never be found, because you've fallen in the cracks. You're lost. No one can do anything to help you. Nobody can even find you. Like I said last week, I hear people sometimes say, man, my life was going bad and then I found the Lord. And I'm thinking, no, you didn't. You didn't find Him. You can't find Walmart without a GPS. You didn't find Him. He found you. And if He hadn't found you, you'd still be lost. Thank God, God loves us enough to sweep the cracks. Where'd God find you? He found you in a crack somewhere. That's where He found you. Running as fast as you could away from God. And if He couldn't run faster than you, you'd never be saved. Just don't tell me that. I know you look spiritual and nice on Sunday, but don't tell me all that stuff. So that was a woman. It offended the Pharisees and the pastors that He even used a woman. Women were considered to be only half the value of men in Jesus' day. If you want to talk about women's liberation, you ought to thank Jesus, because Jesus is the great liberator. Before Jesus came along, women were property. Women were valued like you would any of your livestock. Jesus is the one that elevated womanhood to the fact that you are a person that He died for and He loves, and that you do valuable things. Look at all the women in the Bible that made their way to Jesus and did great and mighty things. And look at all their examples and listen to Jesus say, your testimony will never die. That's the liberator right there, baby. That's who did it for you. Jesus did it. And so this woman becomes an obstacle. Jesus says, I'm the woman. I'm a poor Jewish woman. I identify myself as a poor Jewish woman. And they go, they were taken back by that. That was an offense to them. And then Jesus says, I got one more story for you. And here it is. And He said to them, there was a man who had two sons. And the younger of them said to his father, Father, give me the property that is coming to me. And he delivered the property, and he divided the property between them. Not many days later, the younger son gathered all he had and took a journey into a far country. And there he squandered. That's a good word, isn't it? He squandered his property in reckless living. Everybody say selfishness. That's what reckless living means. Selfishness. He did whatever his beady little mind told him to do. He got whatever his beady little eyes could see and withheld nothing. And as long as he had money, everything's fine. And when he had spent everything, which happens, by the way, you run out. And when you run out, a severe famine arose in that country. Now, everybody say, God. All right. Everybody say, you know, what a time for a famine to arise in the land. Just when he had spent everything, now all of a sudden, there's a famine in the land. Make no mistake about it, guys. God can do many things. And you can run from God, but you can't hide. Because if God's after you, God's looking at you, and God's moving toward you, where are you going to go where God isn't? I mean, really. And this guy's running away from home as fast as possible, spent everything, squandered everything that his dad had given him. And when he had spent all, a famine occurs in the land, and he began to be in need. He doesn't have any more money from daddy, so he's in need. So he went and hired himself out to one of the citizens of that country, who sent him into his fields to feed pigs. Imagine a Jewish boy even being associated with the word pig, much less that's the job you have. You see, when, let me just make this tiny little point. It doesn't really have anything to do with the message today exactly, but, you know, that's what the devil does for you, right there. He entices you. You invest your life, your talents, your money. You do all of that stuff, and when he's finished with you, he has nothing else for you except to point to the pig pen and say, go fig, feed pigs. Because the devil has no life to offer you whatsoever. And when he's finished with you, when he has spent all, then he just points you to the poverty of life, to the pig pens of life and say, this is the best I got for you. Go feed pigs. And so go feed pigs. And he was longing to be fed with the pods that the pig ate, and no one gave him anything, which is great, right? Because if somebody had given him something, he would have never come home. So let this be a lesson unto thee, parents. You know, you can find messages everywhere for parents. let them go without. I mean, you don't have to do everything. Matter of fact, it's good for them if you don't. Let them be in want. They might come to themselves. There are a lot of us that have come to ourselves when somebody quit financing our rebellion, right? Right, yeah. So quit financing rebellion. Let them, if they want to rebel, fine. Do it on your own dime. I'm not paying for your rebellion, so get a job. And no man gave him anything. But when he came to himself, he said, how many of my father's hired servants have more than enough bread, but I perish here with hunger? I will arise and go to my father, and I'll say to him, Father, I have sinned against heaven and before you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son. Treat me as one of your hired servants. Now that was his speech. He practiced his speech. He said, here's my speech. I'm going to go to daddy. I'm going to say, Dad, I know that I left here and disrespected you, and I'm not worth being your son anymore. So I'm not asking you to take me back as your son. I'm asking if I can work for you. I want to be one of your employees because you're a good man and you treat your employees right. You don't let them go hungry, and I'm dying out here. So, Dad, please let me work for you. Let me sign up for the job. So that was his speech, and that's what he had practiced. And when he saw Dad, that's what he was going to say to his father. And the son said to him, Father, I have sinned against heaven and before you, and I'm no longer worthy to be your son. But the father said to his servants, bring quickly the best robe and put it on him and put a ring on his hand and shoes on his feet. Dad didn't even hear what the boy said. He didn't listen to what the boy, I mean, the boy did his pitiful little speech, you know, and Dad evidently didn't even hear him because the boy said, I'm not worthy to be a son. And Dad said, bring the robe. Come on. Yeah, bring the shoes. Put them on his feet. Hey, we got that fatted calf. You know, Bubba, we put him up about 2 years ago. Get that calf and it's in that stall back there. We're going to have some steak tonight. All right. Bless the Lord. And Dad was fired up.
Yeah, yeah.
Dad didn't even think about what the boy had said. Thank the Lord. What a dad. Good night. Welcome that rascal back. I don't know about you, but I'm sitting here going, man, I wouldn't have done that. I'm thinking I'd have put the board on him or something. You know, I mean, I would have been happy for him to come back on his knees, you know, begging. I'd have taken advantage of that a little bit. I mean, you know, it's like, I mean, that's really, what did he do? Wait till I talk to you a second about what he did. Okay. And then I'll ask you again. Okay, what would you do? And so Dad says, we're going to get him some new clothes. We're going to put the robe on him because he's back in the family. We'll put a ring on him and, I mean, welcome him in. He gets some shoes put on his feet. He's got some, you know, rocks up through here. And bring the fatted calf and kill it and let us eat and celebrate. For this my son was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found, and they began to celebrate. Now, everything is wonderful, and that is a great story, and it's a happy story. The boy came home. He learned his lesson. Dad welcomed him back. Everything's good and solid and happy endings, and it wouldn't be hard to have a happy story end with a happy ending, and this would be the end of all of this. Except Jesus adds this sad little postscript. Now, he doesn't do this. This is not his style. But on this little collection of stories that make one parable, actually, he added this sad little ending. Now, his older brother was in the field. You know, the one at the beginning, where he divided between the younger and the older. The older already had his inheritance. He's still working for Dad. He's still at home. I mean, he divided between them. He said, the verse said he divided between them. So that means the older boy got his inheritance too. So he could have left, but he's still there. And he's working in the field, which means he's a hard worker. He's committed to the family. He's trying to make the business a go. He doesn't want Dad to have to be out there by himself. This is a good boy right here. And his older son was in the field, and as he came and he drew near to the house, he heard music and dancing. And he called one of the servants, and he asked what these things meant. And the servant said to him, "Your brother has come, and your father has killed the fatted calf because he has received him back safe and sound." And he was angry and refused to go in. His father came out and entreated him. But he answered his father, "Look, these many years I've served you and I've never disobeyed your command. Yet you never gave me a young goat that I might celebrate with my friends. And when this son of yours came who has devoured your property with prostitutes, you killed the fatted calf for him." And he said to him, "Son, you've always been with me, and all that is mine is yours. It was fitting to celebrate and be glad, for your brother was dead and is alive. He was lost and is found." The end. The end. I know you're going, "Oh, what happened? Did the boy go in? Or what? What happened?" Well, that's one of the points, actually. What did happen? Why did Jesus end the story like that? Why did he even put that little part on there? That just seems kind of out of place. Let me go, and I know you see in the notes that I have three deplorables. We're getting used to deplorables, right? We are deplorables, right? Now, well, here's some more deplorables. Here we go. There are three deplorable things that happen in this story. First deplorable thing happens with the younger son. The younger son comes to Dad, and the younger son says, "Dad, I want my inheritance. I want what belongs to me." Now, this is what he was saying to his dad. Remember now, Jesus is talking to these pastors, these Torah teachers, these scribes, these Pharisees, these teachers of the law. Very much sticklers for details and rules and laws and all of that. So he's talking to them, and he's using this story to pull their chain, all right? And he says, "Let me tell you this story about a boy that came to his dad one day and said, 'Dad, I want my inheritance.'" And you know what they heard? They heard the boy say, "Dad, I don't have any more need for you. Dad, I can't wait for you to die. Dad, I don't want to be at the house anymore. So give me everything that belongs to me and let me get on my way." Now, the Pharisees and the teachers of the law would have went, "What? Because a son talking to his dad with such disrespect? I don't need you anymore. I can't wait for you to die. You're living too long. I know you're a good dad, and we're going to get an inheritance one day when you die, and they're going to be divided up, but I can't wait for you to die.
You're living too long, Dad. Come on, man. You're healthy. You're 95 years old. You're still going around plowing fields and stuff. You're never going to die. I'm never going to get my inheritance, and I'm ready to get out of this place because I want to live on my own, and I want to do my own thing, and I don't need you to run my life. And so, Dad, give me the money that belongs to me, and let me get out of here. That's what those Pharisees heard, and they went, what kind of boy? Man, that had brought the hangman noose out for that. That's life penalty right there. Boy talking to his daddy like that and disrespecting, dishonoring his dad and his family and stuff. My soul. But there's more. The second deplorable thing happened from Dad. According to the Pharisees and the pastors and the teachers of the law, Dad is just flat out negligent. Because no Jewish father, no father, let me ask any of you fathers, any of you fathers in here, would you put up with that little scenario I just said? Would your sons come to you and go tell you that and you do what this father did? This father, you know what this father did? Well, okay, son. And he handed him what he, you know. And to the Pharisees and the teachers of the law, they're going, how could you do that? No dad would do it, much less a Jewish dad. And with all these rules and laws and restrictions, and yet here comes a dad. And this dad just says, okay, whatever you want, here you go. And they would have said, that dad is negligent. That dad, that's malpractice. That's parental malpractice right there. Allowing that boy to talk like that and not punishing him. They got to teach him a lesson, boy. He's going to go out in life and he's not going to make it because he can't treat his boss like that. He can't treat the law like that. He can't treat other people out here on the street like that. So, Dad, it's your job to teach him a lesson and to make sure he knows how to act. But this dad said, okay, here you go. Now, Jesus is teaching them something with this that they haven't seen yet. Believe me, there's a hook in this thing, and Jesus is just leading them right to the hook, and he's getting them involved in what's going on in this situation. And so Jesus looks at them, and Jesus begins to understand that they're beginning to be angry, to be hostile, to pull out the rules and the laws, and they're beginning to feel this legalism. Now, if I hadn't been kind of dragging you along and telling you behind the scenes stuff, I'm having a feeling that probably some of us would be feeling that same thing. See, Jesus was going for a feeling here. Jesus was saying, I'm going to get you stirred up and I'm going to get you feeling what you're doing, and then I'm going to just kind of lower the boom on you. And he was dragging them right toward it, because remember, the Torah, the law, all of those things were intended by God to be a blessing, to bless people and help people and encourage people and move people along toward godliness and goodness and all. But now it had become not a blessing, but it had become a weapon. And these pastors were using what God intended to be a blessing as a weapon to beat these people over the head and to keep them in line and manipulate them and keep them committed to things that they were involved in. And Jesus was telling them, look, before you get all bent out of shape, you might need to think about how God really is, because God's really not like you think he is. Because obviously the way you think God is God is hard, God is mean, God is strict, God is legal. God is just looking for a reason to bop you on the head. God is just waiting for you to mess up. Boy, he wants to kick you so bad, and he's just waiting for one little foul up, and boy, you're a goner for sure. He loves crispy critters. I mean, come on, man. That's what they believe by what they teach. That's what they're teaching the people. That's what they're saying to them. And Jesus says, that's not how God is at all. God's a lot more like this father here I just described than like the person that you think God is. And then the story gets worse, because the boy gets what he wants and he goes away from home and he, what word did we use? Squanders it. He squanders it on selfish living? Have any of you ever said to someone or asked the question, are you saved? Have you ever asked anybody that question? Have you ever had anybody come back with saved from what? Well, if you ever have, here's the answer. Jesus just gave us the answer, saved from what? Sin in its essence, and I don't want to get too philosophical here, but listen to this. Maybe it'll help. This is what the parable's about, what I'm about to say to you right now. Jesus, in this parable, is teaching us about sin and what sin is and what it does and what God does about it. Are you saved? Saved from what? Well, according to Jesus, there are two things that are the essence of sin. Number one, rejection of the Father. Sin is rejection of your Father. And number two, sin is squandering the gifts that He has given you in a selfish way. So Jesus said, you know what we're talking about here? We're talking about sin. We're talking about rejecting the Father who loves you and has given everything in the world to you. And then not only rejecting the Father, but then going away and taking all the gifts that the Father just gave you and squandering it on your selfish life. Man, sin is terrible because sin makes us all equal. Yeah, I know you're looking at me going, what are you talking about? Well, we have all sinned and come short of the glory of God. Yeah. Every single one of us are sinners. And you know what sin does? Sin puts us all on the same level. We are all sinners. We are all alike. We are all together. We're all guilty of the same thing. And then sin brings out the animalistic instinct within us. And so we all become just like each other, involved in all of those things. And we have no godly distinction in our life. So sin, in essence, destroys the humanity that God put us to live in. God created us with gifts and abilities and talents. And he put great things in us so we would be different, so we could accomplish those things. And He gave us gifts, and He poured into us Himself, and He separated us, and He created certain abilities in some and certain abilities in others. And He said, go out and live a life now that will honor me and live to the greatest of your ability. And sin says, no, come on back down here with all the rest of us animals, and let's just live controlled by our senses and our selfishness. Because sin is a rejection of the Father and a squandering of the gifts that God gives you to become the person that God created you to be. And Jesus is looking at him and said, now, those are deplorable things. And then he says, let me give you one more deplorable thought. The boy at the end. This boy is at home. He stays with Dad. He never leaves Dad. He's a good boy. The servants like him. Everybody, he's good. He's good for the farm, good for business, good for eating. I mean, he's a great guy. But all the while he's at home, something's fostering in him. Something's growing in here. And it manifests itself when this young brother of his comes home. Oh, everybody in this parable, that means the shepherd and the sheep, the woman and the coin, the dad and his servants, and everybody in the family, everybody rejoices when that which is lost is found. Luke 15 is often called the parable of joy because joy is all through it. We rejoice, we celebrate when that which is lost is found. Everybody celebrates except the older brother. The older brother does a deplorable thing.
he refuses to go in. And Jesus ended this way. By the way, we're going to go deeply into all three of these people in the next message and the next one. Deeply into them. You'll see, and it's amazing. But just as a shadow of it, a flow of it, this boy does something deplorable. He looks at his dad and he said, "Dad, I'm not going in." And his dad comes out and says, "Come on, Bubba, please. Come on, man. Come on, get you a steak and start dancing. We're having a party. Bubba's home." And the boy stands there and the story ends. It's like, well, did he go in? What happened to him? Jesus ended it and left it that way for two reasons. Number one, he wanted them to answer that question. What he wanted was, what do you think happened? What would you do? Would you go in or would you stay out? You tell me what you would do. You Pharisees, you pastors, you teachers of the law, what would you do? And then number two, he told this story because he wanted the people who heard this story to crave, to desire a true older brother that was unselfish who would come in. Because I guarantee you, every one of us, now let me just explain the mentality of this. Every one of us here, as we hear that story, we know what that boy did, and we know that he came back home and that his dad welcomed him when we would have whipped him or whatever, punished him for what he did. But we've received that because dad did. And now he's given a party for the little fella, and his big brother won't come in. And what are we saying? What are we all feeling in our hearts? What, just exactly what Jesus wanted us to feel when we heard that. Man, that boy needs to go in. He needs to go in. Look at dad. Dad's always treated him good. Dad, he loves dad. And dad's welcomed the little fella in. And man, he needs to give up that pride and give up that jealousy. He needs to go in there and welcome that boy home. If for no other reason, for dad's sake, because he loves dad. Because this is breaking dad's heart. And what we're doing is we're craving, we're wanting an older brother that will be unselfish. That's what we're desiring. We're saying, we want a brother that will go in and do the right thing. And then all of a sudden, ding, you begin to think, uh-oh, wait a minute. This story is not really about a younger brother and an older brother. A young son and an older son. This story is about the son. This story is about the son who's telling the story. Because our older brother left home and came and searched for us. And he kept on searching until he found us. And you know where he found us? He found us in the pig pen. But our older brother didn't look at us and say, "You get what you deserve." Our older brother got down in that pig pen with us and wouldn't leave us in that pig pen, and helped us out of that pig pen and took us back home to daddy's house and made sure that we were received and welcomed when we got there. The Bible says that there's a friend that sticketh closer than a brother. Mm-hmm. Seems like something like that. And Jesus is saying, I'm not angry at you. I'm not bitter with you. I don't reject you. I don't dishonor you. I don't receive any embarrassment from you. You're my brother. Come on home to dad's. Come on with me. That's true. That's what we want. That's what we want, an older brother. Jesus said, yeah, that's what I want you to feel. Yeah, you felt what I wanted you to feel. Yeah, that's it.
older brother. True. See, God feels that way about you. I'm through, guys, so just relax one second. Lots of us feel like God is disappointed with us, or God is displeased, or that we embarrass God. But I'm telling you, this parable, this story, God is the dad in this story. That's God. God, that's how God is. That's what Jesus said. Jesus said, look, I know my Father, and that's my Father right there. That's how my Father is. My Father is not angry. He's not bitter. He's not looking for revenge. Come on home. You'll be surprised if you'll just come on home. And so I'm just inviting you, look, I don't know where you stand with the Lord. Most people in here are Christians, I know. But if you're here and you don't know the Lord, and it's because you think somehow you're an embarrassment to Him, or that He's embarrassed, look, God is shameless. His grace is shameless. That's why it's amazing, because it's shameless. Yeah. You can't make God embarrassed over you. Come on, let's stand to our feet. Let's stand to our feet right where you are. Yeah, just stand right there. Bless the Lord.